This episode is brought to you by Love Hurts. Kiwi Kwan has had quite a career, from childhood roles in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and the Goonies to a recent Academy Award win for Everything Everywhere All at Once. But now, Kiwi finally stars as a leading man in the film Love Hurts. Love Hurts is the perfect date night movie with its mix of over-the-top action, comedy, and a ton of heart. Love Hurts, only at theaters February 7th.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Pour yourself a cold one.
They strike them, huh?
And listen to Ross Tucker break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it's Daddy Soda time here on the College Draft Podcast, presented, of course, by DraftKings. DraftKings, the crown is yours. It is Super Bowl week 2025, which means I will actually be having a lot of Daddy Sodas throughout the week. I think I said this, but I'll say it again just in case. We're presented by DraftKings. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Speaking of Daddy Sodas, why don't I just tell you that my favorite Daddy Soda Light is for sure Labatt Blue Light. That's what I like to drink with friends, living life to the power of we, family, while I'm watching football pretty much all the time, grilling. Always enjoy responsibly beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. All right, so Emery, next week we'll have a lot of post-Super Bowl thoughts on scouting lessons. We talked last week about some of our scouting lessons from the NFC Championship game now and AFC Championship game. But for now, I want to get into the two biggest All-Star games by far. They both just took place, the Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl. I guess let's start with that. Let's start with why, like, nobody really even talks about the Shrine Game practices. Shrine Game itself. They just talk about the practices, excuse me. And same with the Senior Bowl. Why is that? I mean, to me, it's like there are definitely guys that perform better in games than they do in practice and vice versa. Like, we've all seen it every team we've ever been on.
That therein lies the message right there, Ross, is because we know we used to call it, I'm pretty sure you call it the same thing in Princeton, practice All-Americans, where guys perform exceptionally well in practice, but kind of shrunk in the game. And with these All-Star game moments, it's a little bit more unique because in the practices, you have all of the scouts, coaches, GMs of the NFL and other leagues standing right there on the sideline, lining the edge of the field. And so in your biggest job interview, they're watching you and you're starting to get in your own head, man. I wonder if, what are they writing down? Are they writing out something that I do wrong? Are they even talking about me? So that's in your mind. And then we know in the game, that's probably where it feels most normal because it's just your team and team personnel on the sidelines. So that's why some guys are able to rise to the occasion during the game and some guys consistently do it in practice. You kind of want to see everybody go straight through. But I understand why some guys understand of the value of the practices, even though the scouts will watch the games on film, but being there for the practices and everyone's watching them, they turn it up there and then they may sit out the ball game. But the game is just as important because how do you put it all together? How do you put together the whole week and how do you perform when the lights are bright and everybody around the world is watching?
You know, we also saw, like, at the Shrine Game during the week, I don't think we talked about him last week, Kyle McCord. And I'm curious about him. Did he not have another year of eligibility? I can't recall if Kyle had, because I don't remember him really ever redshirting. I'd have to check on that. But you know what? He must have had another year because Marvin Harrison left after three and they came in the same year. So yeah, Kyle must have just been four and done. Which is actually, that used to be like somewhat normal. Now that's like very, very rare. What did you think of Kyle McCord down there at the Shrine Game? Because you were there, because you're always there. And what kind of prospect do you think he is?
And for the record, I think they tried to apply for another season for him, but it got denied, I believe.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so he ended up staying in a draft or whatnot. And in terms of the week, I thought he had a really good week, to be honest. You know, and what he did well, he had, obviously you had the instant connection with Aronde Gaston II, who was also there as well. And so that connection was evident in how they operated in 7-on-7, in team period, and also in 1-on-1s when they got to line up with each other. But McCord did a good job there, threw the football extremely well, confident. And confidence is key when we're talking about quarterbacks. And you've seen him completely turn it around. We saw this with Will Howard at Ohio State. We talked about that last show where, you know, he had to lock in because he was becoming the liability and not the asset. And Kyle McCord has been able to carry his ability through the season and now into the postseason where he won practice quarterback player of the week.
Anybody else really jump out to you in the game itself? We talked about the practices that were, I think, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or maybe Saturday, Sunday, Monday, last week on Monday morning. What about the game itself? Did anybody jump out at you?
The MVP, Ja'Cory Crosky Merritt of Arizona by way of New Mexico, by way of Alabama State, right? So the speed and explosiveness, and again, there's an added benefit for a lot of these guys that we don't talk about enough of, where this is his second All-Star game because he played in the Hula Bowl. Ooh. Got the call up to the Shrine game. So he has fresh legs in terms of, like, you know, everybody else for the most part are putting on equipment for the first time since November or December. And so he has already gotten game shape by playing in the Hula Bowl and performed well there. So no surprise that he hit the ground running figuratively and literally in the Shrine game, and he had a great run earlier in the game and was named the MVP at the end. So he really stood out because in a draft where there are a ton of talented backs and guys that have some semblance of explosiveness based on what we're seeing now in the NFL, teams are going to be looking for those guys. They're going to be looking for Jahmyr Gibbs, like Saquon Barkley, like. Both what Gibbs and Barkley have are explosiveness. And if you have that, that's where you can kind of elevate your stock. And I thought Crosky Mary did that in both All-Star games, Hula and Shrine.
Got it. Let's talk about the Senior Bowl practices and what stood out to you there. Who jumped out to you in the Senior Bowl practices themselves?
Obviously, you got to go look at the small school guys. And Ross, I brought up Tyler Elgersma,
yeah,
you know, prior to, on this show, prior to, you know, the Senior Bowl when he was at the College Gridiron Showcase, how he stood out. Then he got the call to the Tropical Bowl, stood out in those practices. Then he got the ultimate call up to the Senior Bowl and stood out. So based on what I said about Crosky Merritt, he has three All-Star games. He's because he was at the East-West Bowl in Canada, but that was back in May. So he has two games in January in the States, which is huge, which shrinks that transition from the Canadian game to the American game. And that kind of helped him have a great start to the day on day one because the live arm was still there. He was confident in throwing deep down the field and threw that ball accurately. And it's funny because people were asking me, well, what's the difference in, you know, he's playing quarterback. Like, bro, playing quarterback in the Canadian game is like going from playing in the parking lot to playing in the classroom. Like, it shrinks. The field shrinks. You know what I'm saying? So you got to be a little bit more quicker with your decisions and your releases. And for him, he was working on under-center stuff because he's probably never done under-center stuff in Canada and rolling out, coming off flashing from under-center. And that's where he had to work through some issues. But in terms of just straight firing the football, intermediate to deep, he stood out completely. And how about North Dakota State offensive lineman Gray Zabel?
Yeah.
I tweeted out, Ross, that this was day one. He had not lost a rep in 1-on-1s at either guard or center. So wherever he was lined up, he was stonewalling. And not just because he stood out. What made it stand out even more so, and we talked about this with Cam Miller at the Shrine Bowl, the fact these dudes just played a full 16-game season 2 weeks ago, ending in the national championship game went out there in these All-Star games, competed every rep, every day, and he was outstanding. The talk went from, you know, this is a good day two guy, to now he may even flirt with end of round one, and justifiably so.
Wow. Question for you. Wasn't he a tackle at North Dakota State?
He was a tackle at North Dakota State. And as was his other teammate who starred at the College Gridiron Showcase. So you're getting to see what can he do moving inside. More than held his own in confined spaces, technically sound, good core strength, sat down right away and stopped any type of bull rush, had an answer for every counter the defensive lineman had. So he had a fantastic week. I would also say this, when we're looking at someone like Shamar Stewart, right, who had I've compared him to two different players from two different scenarios. The story about Shamar Stewart reminds me a lot of Rashawn Gary coming out of Michigan, where this five-star player, all of these boxes that he's checked athletically, he should have had double-digit sacks, but he didn't. But then when you look at his play and look at how he plays, he reminds me a lot of Cam Jordan in that regard, because he can play across the front. He could be a five technique. He could be a base seven. You can kick him down inside, let him rush over the guard. He has those traits, and despite the production not being there, just like Rashawn Gary's production wasn't there in college, I think he could be a stud as a pro, regardless of where he goes, regardless of the defense, because he has those athletic traits.
Got it. I've seen some video of that dude. He's like, what, 6'6", 280, but he can move?
He can move. You saw the viral clip of him over Emory Jones at right tackle. He quickly beat him off the edge, got the strip sack against Jalen Milrow in a team period. And it was just like, man, how quickly he got off the ball. It was just impressive.
Yeah, it's funny. A couple different thoughts on that. Number one, you know, I feel like we put a little bit too much stock in one-on-ones.
Right.
I know it's the thing that everybody can watch for O-line, D-line play, and it's when guys jump out. I'll just say I was terrible in one-on-ones, but I was a solid player. I've also seen guys that were incredible in one-on-ones, like never lost them, but when the picture's changing and it's more than just having to block that guy across from you, when there's a blitz or a stunt or they got to see, they just couldn't do it, dude. And the reality is, you can get by with me because you can scheme around me, because you can help me. But if a guy can't see it, blitzes or stunts, he can't play. Like, you can't have him out there. I'm talking mainly offensive linemen right now, but I can give you examples of guys that incredible in one-on-ones. Even, I'll give you an example. Jason Peters didn't start till midway through his second year.
Mm-hmm.
He was not ready in training camp his second year, even though they had moved him to O-line towards the end of his first year. So he went through all of OTAs, all of training camp. He wasn't ready to start. He wasn't seeing blitzes. Like, a guy would come off the edge and he would just stay with the end, you know, where he was supposed to kick out. It finally, I give Tom Donahoe a lot of credit. He said to us, like, might take another year. But he knew it was going to happen for him. It didn't. It only took half a year. You know, by half a year, he had it figured out. But some guys can eventually get it. And then there's other guys that they never get it. They never get the mental part of it, which is just something I thought was interesting. I think the one-on-ones, like the other point I would make about one-on-ones, like I've seen, I want to ask you about this guy, Mike Green. And I've seen him bull rush and kill the guy and stuff. What I like about that is the tenacity.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about that is the aggression. What I would say, though, is like everybody gets run over sometimes. You know what I mean? Like they're going to get you sometimes. It's not the end of the world. And usually if they run you over, the truth is they're probably not going to get a sack. They're probably going to trip over you as they're knocking you over. But I know that went viral, too, because I've seen that everywhere on social media.
And you know, the tackle is a great one in Connerly. So it's not like, you know, that guy just, it was a tomato can out there. It was a good player who just had a bad rep. And that's why you have to look in things in context where you start to piece things together like a great detective show. Okay, we look at one-on-ones, but let's see him in, you know, the combo block drill, or the, you know, where they get, you know, see if they could set the edge or run fits or split double teams. And then let's see that in a larger setting in 907. And then let's piece it together in team with the passing game. So that's why you got to piece those things together, because you're right. If you just look at things siloed off, you can get an improper picture. And Green, first of all, Ross, he's playing a great Sun Belt Conference, so I'm not surprised that he is in this ball game. Number one, but number two, it was good to see him, you know, go and flip sides, each edge, and then also compete against some of these higher end tackles that he doesn't see in the Sun Belt Conference. But what we did see was him, you know, try to figure out a way. He's going to have to work through some different moves and different paths to the quarterback. I don't think this is the venue to try to work on your game, you know, in terms of like what you have in your arsenal. So that's where he's going to have to try to work with someone, Chuck Smith, and try to get him where he needs to be for NFL draft.
You know, I also wanted to ask you, speaking of smaller schools, how about this guy, Carson Vinson from Alabama A&M? What did you see from him?
He talked about made some money, Ross. But this is tying to the point I've always wanted to make, or I have made about scheduling at the FCS level. Sometimes it's the money games, and we don't like it. But for Alabama A&M's case, for Vincent's case, kudos to them for having Auburn on the schedule, because you got to see him go already toe-to-toe with some top-tier pass rushers, because we know Auburn tends to have guys that are twitched up. Yes. So he wasn't shocked coming here to Mobile and holding his own. And then by him holding his own consistently throughout the week in team period and also in 907, you kind of, okay, this dude could play tackle, because he came in, you know, just under 6'6", 315, and built the right way. I'm talking about thin ankles, a lean frame, you know, athletically built, long arms, and did a great job versus speed. Now, power, because he's trying to anticipate guys getting his chest, and they can knock him off balance. So he's going to have to keep those hands a little bit tighter and strike first in that regard. But in terms of guys just trying to beat him on the edge, I don't know how many times he escorted guys up out the club. But in terms of, you know, him down to down, day to day, he was outstanding. Definitely raised his stock this week in Mobile.
What about the quarterbacks, Emery? You mentioned the Canadian kid and Elgersma and the good things he did. What about the flip side? What about the other guys?
There is a difference, Ross. And, you know, everyone talks about Jackson Dart. I've never seen the type of PR Jackson Dart has gotten based off one throw in the bowl game on a midweek night in December, right? It's just amazing. January, what that was, when, you know, it was the only game on that was a non-playoff game, because people have started to, you know, jack up his stock in terms of he could be QB2. He might be QB1. But Jackson Dart is a good player. And seeing him outside of the Ole Miss offense was great for the evaluation, because that's what you need to see. How can he function in a truncated offense that's not the Ole Miss offense that has a lot of easy plays and a lot of easy answers for you? So I thought he did well in that regard. There's a difference in the arm. There was a play where a guy ran a post, a little skinny post over the middle field. Let's call it an in route, a dig route. And if he drills it, the guy scores. But he did put a lot of power into his throw, but it still took a little bit of time for it to get there, thus allowing the defense to, you know, get back into the play and tackle a dude for a 20-yard gain as opposed to a touchdown. That's the difference when arm strength and anticipation matters, or being able to drive the football in a tight window. Jalen Milroe, I felt like had some inconsistency with footwork in terms of trying to, you know, because again, all of these guys, I'll say Dart, Milroe, all of these quarterbacks that spent primarily their career in the shotgun had issues taking a snap on the center, fumble snaps. The drops weren't as clean, and you saw this manifest itself in a run game where it's all about timing, where I expect you to get out from under center, half a second turn, but when you stumble out the snap, it's tougher. It throws off the time of the whole play. And then some of the throws, you're just like, you wanted to see him work on the shorts to intermediate more so this week. We know he could hit the deep ball, but we want to see him be more consistent and flatline his plays short to intermediate. So I thought that's where he left some money on the table this week.
Did Milrow have another year?
He did. He did. He came out early as a, I want to say, true junior.
That is so interesting to me that these guys that, like, when do you think he'll get drafted?
I think Milrow can, based off, here's why I think he can go late first, early second. Because of the teams that need quarterbacks that are not picking top
They
two.
Said he was a redshirt junior. I'm just looking at this. Redshirt junior,
okay.
But, so, I mean, that means he clearly had at least one more year and maybe one more two. Year.
Right. So, I think a team, let's say if the Giants are sitting there at three and they're out of Shador and Cam Ward, and I think you have to take Travis Hunter, but then you can see the Giants maybe jumping back in late round one to get Milrow if he's falling, or stay pat at the top of round two and take him there. I think that's where he goes, because Ross, the one thing you can't ignore is his ability to turn that corner and go 80 yards for a touchdown. And also, to his credit, this will play well for him at the combine when teams talk to him. Great kid. The Campbell Award Trophy winner, the academic Heisman, to be the starting quarterback at Alabama, to perform like he did, and he was going through a different offense this year, but also to stay that locked in the classroom and win the academic Heisman. When I'm a member of the NFF, I'm pretty sure you are as well.
Yep.
I remember going to one of the Campbell Award presentations out here in New York City and listening to the majors and the GPAs. There is no possible way I would have ever been a Campbell Award nominee at all, even with my little communication degree. There's no way these dudes are majoring in molecular life-saving skills and having a 5.6 GPA. So the fact that he's able to do something like that and be a starting quarterback at the University of Alabama and be of the caliber is going to play well. Coaches will say, I can work with him on the things that he needs to work on. So I can see him going late first, definitely top of the second.
What about this tight end from Miami who's, like, electric? What's the deal with this Arroyo guy? I didn't know that much about him before this week.
He's very good, fluid athlete, was winning one-on-ones consistently, even though obviously that's heavily slanted toward the offense in that regard. But he was doing well in team and also 7-on-7. So you have a little bit more perspective there. But his whole thing is you just got to stay healthy. He was banged up a lot. If he can stay healthy, that's the one that can threaten a defense, that a defense will have to game plan for, because he was outstanding at the Senior Bowl. Comfortable catching the ball away from his body, understands where his hands are, and it's almost like if you was draped all over him, it didn't matter because you wasn't big enough, and he's just able to catch the ball with ease. So he was outstanding.
I love it. Anybody else that I didn't mention yet, Emery, that I should have that you want to talk about?
Upton Stout, the cornerback from Western Kentucky. Tavon Young out of Temple reminded me a lot of him. And size is not a skill. You know where I stand on that. Upton came in at 5'9", 185, but was locking stuff down on the outside, showing that he could be an outside corner, one of the rare 5'9 guys that can do it. We grew up watching Aaron Glenn. We grew up watching Eric Allen and Darryl Green. And you know what I'm saying? So we grew up watching guys. There was no slot corner or field of boundaries, just cornerback. So he could play cornerback. And great footwork, great press skills, great ability to play the ball through the hands. Everywhere you saw a receiver and the ball was going that way, you saw him on the receiver like an extra set of skin. So he was phenomenal this week.
Got it. That's interesting. Tell me your thoughts, just because I knew of his brother a little bit, on Jack Besh, the younger brother of Tiger Besh, who was tragically killed in New Orleans on New Year's Eve.
Considering the circumstances, he won the week, because for him just to even be out there was impressive. But on top of that, people forget how fantastic of a football player he is. He was going to be the next one at LSU. So remember, he had that great freshman season, and then he dealt with some injuries and then got usurped by two first-round picks in Chase and also Jefferson, right? So he goes to TCU, and he was out there winning one-on-one contested catches, good athleticism, showing the ability to adjust to the football. So he had good work in 7-on-7 and team periods. I like that he went out there and competed. We know the story. We know how hard that had to be on him. And this was probably a place where he felt at ease, and it showed out there on the field because he's checking all these boxes. Kind of looks like a, you know, DJ Chark, someone like that, or someone that could win, you know, in multiple ways. I thought Besh kind of reminded some folks how good he was to start at LSU.
Emery reminds us every week how good he is, which is why you need to follow him on social media at FBallGamePlan. Certainly Football Game Plan on YouTube, but the big thing is it's time. Now's the time. FootballGamePlan.com/2025 draft guide. If you follow him on social media, he posts the links every once in a while to it. I reposted that this week. Ross Tucker Pod reposted this week. You can follow me at Ross Tucker NFL, us at Ross Tucker Pod. We're always on YouTube as well, youtube.com/RossTuckerNFL. Keg is kicked. We're all tapped out.
Thanks for tuning in to College Draft. Make sure to also check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and Fantasy Feast, all on the DraftKings Network, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.